are willing to face the storm, and I got to give you credit for that, though, of course, I support the storm and think you're wrong. But thank you very much for coming on the Inside Scoop. Tune in Sunday. We've got a veteran that's just back from Iraq discussing his opposition to the war, and that's all for the Inside Scoop. Mark Levine, signing off.
Bush has revealed he expects American soldiers to be in Iraq for many years to come. He's compared his vision of the future in Iraq to be similar to that of South Korea. He made the announcement as the last of the troop surge, 21,500 U.S. combat personnel arrived in Baghdad. In Fallujah, a suicide bomber detonated himself in a line of potential police recruits this morning, killing 25 people and wounding 50 others. Also in Iraq, three more U.S. soldiers have been killed, bringing the monthly total to 119. That makes May one of the bloodiest months for American troops since the invasion in 2003. In Cuba, a Saudi Arabian prisoner at Guantanamo Bay has become the fourth detainee to commit suicide since the facility opened in 2002. 380 prisoners are held at the camp. Two have been charged with a crime. Atlanta attorney Andrew Speaker has been identified as the tuberculosis patient who took several international flights recently. The 31-year-old told a newspaper he knew he had the disease when he left for Europe to get married. Once in Rome, health officials told Speaker not to fly again, but he boarded a flight to Canada. Today it was also revealed that Speaker's new father-in-law works for the Centers for Disease Control researching TB. President Bush has proposed a meeting with the world's biggest economies to take action on cutting greenhouse gas emissions. While the president has so far opposed many European ideas on limiting global warming, he's positioning the U.S. to begin negotiations. Actor and former U.S. Senator Fred Thompson said he's testing the political waters for a campaign run as a Republican presidential candidate. The FBI says its annual crime report to be released next week will show an increase in murder, robbery, and other felonies for a second straight year. In Seattle, a man described as the world's most successful spammer has been indicted on 35 counts, including mail fraud and identity theft. Federal law enforcement agents say computer users may see an immediate decrease in spam. This is QNN.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
A Harry Potter theme park will open in Florida by 2009. The project was kept secret until today when author J.K. Rowling announced she's given the go-ahead. Warner Brothers and Universal Resorts will be recreating the magic world of her fictional wizard hero in Orlando. Russian cosmonauts have completed a 5.5-hour spacewalk to mount panels on the side of the International Space Station. The panels will protect it from collisions with space debris. Weather forecasters say Tropical Storm Barbara, currently off the coast of Oaxaca, can be expected to reach the resort town of Acapulco, Mexico, by Monday. And according to the Commerce Department, the economy's first quarterly growth was the worst showing in more than 4 years. The FTC has approved AstraZeneca's $15 billion acquisition of biotech firm MedImmune. The Anglo-Swedish pharmaceutical company says the deal will increase its drug portfolio and allow it to venture further into the biotech marketplace. Mobile phone manufacturer Motorola has also announced it will eliminate another 4,000 jobs this year as part of its plan to cut costs and raise profitability. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.01 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended down 5 points, the Nasdaq up 12, and the S&P ended flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Okay, don't you
stop America!
I'll you proud.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes past the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. Invigorated, I tell you, after listening to our good friend Mark Levine. The peel that right-wing Republican like a grape in the last hour. It's a sweet thing, you know. And Mark's right. It's hard to find them to come out and take their ass whippings now that they've earned them and they know that they're gonna get them. But bless his guest's heart for being straight up enough to come and take the kicking. 'Cause God knows they need it. God knows they need it. Did you hear the statistic that was mentioned toward the end of the news broadcast there from our good friends at Quality News Network? It appears that the economic numbers are such that the latest numbers that have come out are the worst in 4 years. Now, you have to sit down and sort of let that toddle around your brain a minute, or at least I did, before it dawns on you that what that means is that you remember when Bush was running for re-election and we said, you know, this is the worst president since Herbert Hoover? Guess what? Guess what that means? It means he's still the worst president since Herbert Hoover. The economic miracle that they've been trying to, and that, you know, some people, fools willing to be conned, have been willing to swallow them. Oh, you know, there's a great economic boom, and so America's living on Frisbees and wheat checks and love. It's great out there. Bug spray. It still sucks. 'Cause Bush still sucks. Because his economic policies still suck. Because he's a Republican, and that's what Republicans do. They suck all the life out of economies, out of families, out of communities. It's what they do. But we're not going to go there first. No. I'm invigorated. It's like, I don't know. It's like listening to Mark peel apart that Republican. It was as invigorating as a really good shot of high quality tequila. Oops, Bush screwed that up too. Did you catch that? I saw that a couple of days ago and emailed the story off to our good buddy Bart Cop. Because I love participating with Bart Cop's page. I just love it. I've been doing it since 1999, and God, that's 8 years. Where'd they go? And there's a story out. And it just blew me away. Mexican farmers, this according to Reuters, Mexican farmers are setting ablaze fields of blue agave, the cactus-like plant used to make the fiery spirit tequila. In its nasty form, its Cuervo form, its Two Fingers form, its Montezuma Pepe Lopez form, otherwise known as Mexican gasoline, they're setting fire to their agave fields so that they can turn it, till it, and plant number 2 field-grade corn, Roundup Ready, brought to you by Monsanto. Because the demand for corn has risen so high with Bush's misguided determination that corn-based ethanol, some anol, is gonna be the solution to our energy dependency problems, which is just crazy. We discussed this, had a long conversation with our good friend Albert from Wisconsin a few nights ago, and we discussed the fact that no, corn-based alcohol is not the solution to our energy problems because of the lack of significant yield. The switch to corn will contribute to an expected scarcity of agave in coming years, with officials predicting that farmers will plant between 25 and 35% less agave this year to turn the land over to corn, because you get a yield from corn in a year. It takes 8 years. Can you imagine 8 years for an agave to get to the point where it is ready to be harvested, baked, and mashed, and pulped, and fermented and turned into tequila, good, bad, or otherwise? So, at the same time that we have economic proof in our hands this evening that George Bush is as bad now as he was 4 years ago when he was telling us, if you'll just reelect me, I'll make it better. It's going to get better. We're turning a corner. That's the second anniversary of that, too. Dick Cheney saying that, I believe the insurgency is in its last throes. Well, its last throes have gone on for 2 years now. 2 long years in which 2,000-plus good, honorable, hard-working, decent folks, working people like Joe Bagent was talking about last night, have died, have been needlessly led to the slaughter like sheep, being told that they were defending America, which they weren't. Being told that they were protecting us so that the Iraqis can't follow us home, which they can't. Died for lies. Oh, what a weird little intersection of facts. George Bush is still screwing up the economy as badly as he has done since the day he entered office. It's the second anniversary of Dick Cheney claiming that the insurgency is in its last throes, and we find out that something as... it's an art form, really. It really is when it's made well. Something as artistic and wonderful as tequila. How can a president screw up booze? Especially when the president is a drunk. I mean, that's one of those where you just kind of sit there and, you know, tap your little self in the head for a minute. He screwed up the tequila supply. Now we have to invade Mexico. Oh! God. But yeah, it really, 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 it is, in fact, the second anniversary of the insurgency is... in its last throes. No kidding. Well, that reminds that itself takes me somewhere, and that is to Clarksville Online, the voice of Clarksville, Tennessee. I don't know if it's up. I don't know if in Clarksville it's like it is in Alabama. You don't say veal, you say wool. Clarksville, Huntsville, Russellville, Clarksville. It may be Clarksville. But there's something especially poignant in it, because the biggest part of Clarksville's young manhood was killed fairly early on in the Civil War, the war between the states, the war of northern aggression, whatever you want to call it. And then here in this Clarksville Online site,
you have this. Headline, a soldier in Iraq asks in despair, why are we here? He says, my name is Donald Hudson, Jr. I've been serving in our country's military actively for the last 3 years. I am currently deployed to Baghdad on forward operating base Loyalty, where I have been for the last 4.5 months. I came here as part of the first wave of the so-called troop surge, but so far it has effectively done nothing to quell insurgent violence. I have seen the rise in violence between the Sunni and the Shia. This country is in the middle of a civil war that has been going on since the 7th century. Sounds like young Private Hudson knows more history of that region than the so-called commander-in-chief, the decider. Anyway, why, he asks, are we here when this country still to date does not want us here? Why does our president's personal agenda consume him so much that he cannot pay attention to what is really going on here? Let me tell you a story. On May 10th, I was out on a convoy mission to move barriers from a market to a joint security station. It was no different from any other night, except the improvised explosive device that hit our convoy this time actually pierced through the armor of one of our trucks. The truck was immediately engulfed in flames. The driver lost control and wrecked the truck into one of the buildings lining the street. I was the driver of the lead truck in our convoy. The fifth out of six was the one that got hit. All I could hear over the radio was a friend from the sixth truck screaming that the fifth truck was burning up real bad and that they needed fire extinguishers real bad. So I turned my truck around and drove through the concrete barriers to get to the burning truck as quickly as I could. I stopped 30 meters short of the burning truck, got out and ripped my fire extinguisher out of its holder, and ran to the truck. I ran past another friend of mine on the way to the burning truck. He was screaming something, but I couldn't make it out. I opened the driver's door to the truck and was immediately overcome by the flames. I sprayed the extinguisher into the door, and then I saw my roommate's leg. He was the gunner of that truck. His leg was across the driver's seat that was on fire, and the rest of his body was further in the truck. My fire extinguisher died, and I climbed into the truck to attempt to save him. I got to where his head was, in the back passenger side seat. I grabbed his shoulders and attempted to pull him from the truck out the driver's door. I finally got him out of the truck head first. His face had been badly burned. His leg was horribly wounded. We placed him on a spine board and did our best to attempt buddy aid. We heard him trying to gasp for air. He had a pulse and was breathing, but was not responsive. He was placed into a truck and rushed to the green zone, where he died within the hour. His name was Michael K. Frank. He was 36 years old. He was a great friend of mine and a mentor to most of us younger soldiers here. Now I am still here in this country, wondering why, and having to pick up the pieces of what is left of my friend in our room. I would just like to know what is the true reason we're here. This country poses no threat to our own. So why must we waste the lives of good men on a country that does not give a damn about itself? Most of my friends here share my views, but do not have the courage to say anything. That's a soldier. That's not some squishy liberal talk show host babbling on night after night. No, sunshine, that's a soldier. Most of my friends here share my views, but do not have the courage to say anything. Don't Donald C. Hudson, the article notes, is a private assigned to the 1st Brigade Special Troops Battalion, 1st Brigade Combat Team, 82nd Airborne Division. The 82nd Airborne has most recently been part of the surge. Wouldn't you love to be able to answer that young man's questions? Wouldn't you love to make George Bush give an honest answer to that young man's questions? Not the same old tired garbage. Yeah, we're fighting him there so we won't have to fight him here. No, no, no. Just tell the truth for once in your sorry, stinking, miserable life, George Walker Bush. Just once. It's. I read that last night and wanted to make sure that I shared it with you. There are about 14 responses. And people reaching out, trying to help the young man. But I don't know if there's any helping him. I don't know if anything's going to help him until such time as those friends of his there, who he says lack the courage to speak out, find their courage. They've got the courage to follow orders day in and day out, go out in beyond the wire, so to speak, travel in these convoys. Because they have to, because they know that they'll be imprisoned or charged with something if they do not. But they lack the courage, he says, to speak out. When they get that courage, then perhaps change will come. Because you and I, we have hollered, we have written letters, we have beaten down doors, we have spoken politely to Congress critters, we've spoken not so politely to them. Some of us have gathered in marches and in parades and in rallies and protests. Still, our elected representatives have ignored us. It may well be, that the only people who can end this are members of the United States military who finally put down their arms and refuse to participate. What are they going to do? Court-martial the whole damned army? Huh? You know, it's a little bit like Arlo Guthrie said. Pretty soon you've got a movement. That may be the only thing that saves. And I pray he is saved, Private Donald Hudson Jr. It was a tough thing to read last night. It's a tougher thing to read again. But I wanted to share it with you. The lines are open for you. 304-658-5453. 877-443-2366. Either one gets you right here to the studio. It's about you. It's Conversation Radio on America's Liberal Voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm falling into this. The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The following is a Head On Radio Network special announcement. Ha ha, I'm back! That's right, the rampaging, ranting, tree-hugging, planet-saving, head-banging hippie is back at a brand new time. Foxed Up returns weekdays 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, and late night 1 a.m. in Sydney. So set your streamer to a new Foxed Up time here on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
It's bound to come up. Is this guy qualified to be a gay radio host? Well, my mother made me a homosexual, and if you send her some yarn, she'll make one for you, too!
Well, if I should take an ocean, you jump into the ocean.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Foxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary. We'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox on Foxed Up. And for music with political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Coming up on 28 minutes past the hour, I'm Bob, and we go straight to the phone. Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Pretty much destroyed after hearing that. I read it earlier on the web and fell apart, as usual. To me, my biggest fear, though, is what the Army's going to do to that kid.
Well, yeah, I was going to get around to that, but, yeah, since you brought it up.
Because they don't like it when their soldiers come out and say...
They don't like it when soldiers exercise their First Amendment right to free speech. Let's just face it. We do not have a first... We don't have a military that is sensitive to the right. I mean, we've got a military that asks its soldiers to give up their First Amendment rights in order to protect and defend them?
Yeah. It doesn't make much sense, does it?
No.
But I have a feeling that they're going to come down on him. They're either going to court-martial him or do the David thing, do what David did to his rival.
Well, you know, maybe that's part of the strategy. Maybe that finally gets him out of there.
Personally, it's preferable to putting him at the front of the battle.
Yeah. Susan, I noticed that I started seeing the story a couple of days ago, how Dear Leader has said that we will be in Iraq for 50 years, just like
yeah.
Korea. And it's apparently finally getting noticed in other media circles. How's the I mean, 70% of the American people say that this is a mistake and we need to end it. How's this going to play?
Well, I know how it played with me when I blogged it on the Horn website in great big letters. It's impeach the creep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how, you know, let's face it. They're probably not going to do it, but that's what needs to be done. They need to toss the creep out. And then they need to hand him over to The Hague.
Well, at this point, I'm willing for whatever victories we could get. Getting rid of him would be enough, and let him go back to Crawford and or wherever the hell he's going to go. Dubai is probably where he'll wind up moving. Maybe, I don't know, be next-door neighbors with Michael Jackson or some such.
Although I did have a nice dream where he moved to Paraguay, and the citizens of Paraguay, being somewhat less regimented than we are, took care of the problem for us.
Now, let's not get us arrested.
Hey, it's not a felony to say the citizens of Paraguay are not like American citizens.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. And it's not against American law to do something in Paraguay.
That might be a little finer shade of gray, Susan.
Especially since I'm not advocating anybody do it.
No, it was just a dream you had, just a dream. Yeah. It was all just a dream.
And besides that, historical processes take their own sweet time and do their own thing.
The wheels of justice...
Willy-nilly.
Yeah, what is it? The wheels of justice grind exceeding slow, but they also grind exceeding fine.
Exactly. And karma works in its own sweet way, but it'll get you sooner or later. But I really hope they don't land on this kid, because, you know, there was a picture of him on that website. He's a baby.
Yeah, he's just a little... He's a young man.
My youngest kid's older than he is.
Sure.
Oh, God, that makes me feel old.
Mm-hmm.
But he's such a baby, and he does all... God.
They all are. They all are, Susan.
Yeah.
Except, well, no. I'm wrong. I tend to think of young men, young women, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. But the guy he was talking about that he tried to rescue was 36.
Uh-huh. But, let's face it, after you've seen something like this, you're never young again.
No.
Never, ever again.
No.
And that's the really, really sad part of it.
And that, yeah.
For a lie.
For a lie. I think I said this sometime last week or maybe the week before. It's gotten to the point, Susan, where I almost don't know how to talk about Iraq anymore.
I don't know how to do it without getting so angry I start reverting back to the Vietnam era. Because I can't help thinking a lot of those officers that are dying in Iraq, I wonder how many of them have been shot in the back by their own troops.
Well, look at the suicide numbers are guarded, but we know that there's a lot of suicide there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think that fragging has become a problem yet. But then again, we don't have the information. We can speculate, but that's fruitless. But we know that we know that people who come back without a bullet hole in them are shattered.
Mm-hmm.
These are problems that the piper hasn't submitted his bill.
Oh yeah, and the piper won't for years. My husband served in World War II in Korea.
Right.
he's just now having PTSD start to surface.
Not surprising.
And it can lay way, way, way down deep for
years and decades.
Years,
sure.
Decades. This is a whirlwind we are signing up to reap.
Yeah. And
God.
Congress doesn't, and you know, Congress, maybe we'll, you know, someday, you know, we'll end
Congress,
this.
Congress, the best thing we could do is tell Congress, okay, it's your turn, you go fight.
No, they don't do that. They don't do that. They just vote for wars. They don't fight them.
Yes, I know. They're.
Yeah. I know. Susan, thank you so very much.
Yeah, you have a real nice night.
I'm going to try. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And onward to our good buddy Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, a little bit disturbed. Disturbed.
Yeah. You're disturbed on a Shakespearean level. Yes, I understand.
Yeah, I'm disturbed. I'm tired of listening to, you know, the right wing talk and the left wing talk, okay? We're not.
I don't think anybody ever told that fellow he was a liar before.
Well, he was a liar. And he was. And they are. They lie and they lie and they lie. And, you know, Bob, the one thing that I love about you and Head On Radio is we don't lie to each other. We do not try to be false.
No.
We just come off as who we are and what we stand for. What we believe in. I believe in you. I believe in Agnes. I believe in your family. I believe in your values. And you have those family values that they pretended to have. They didn't have them. We've always had them, Bob. We have, as these left-leaning liberals that we are, we have always believed that our children are sacrosanct. They are what we are here for. We're not here for ourselves. But that man was there for himself and his party. We're not here for the Democratic Party. We're not here. Like Cindy Sheehan said, I'm tired. I'm tired of being denigrated. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of you people. You people. You Americans. I'm tired of you. I'm tired of your trite little games that you play. And if you think you're a Democrat, you're not. You think you're a Christian, you're not a Christian. You do not follow any of the tenets of your religion or of your politics. None of you. Not one. If you are a liberal, then you will stand for liberality, as George Washington, the founder, the founding father of this country. Everybody calls George Washington the founding father of this country, and he said at his last address to this nation, may this nation always, always be blessed with liberality. And that means liberals rule, Bob, and it's time we take back the rule.
It is, Bob, but what I said to Susan, I mean very sincerely, I'm getting to a place, and maybe this indicates that I've failed somehow in what I've set out to do here. I don't know how to talk about Iraq anymore.
I don't either, but I know this. My sons and my daughters are dying in Iraq. My children, not yours, not the American children, but the children of us leaders, us sergeants, us master sergeants, us gunnery sergeants, every one of us are guilty because we followed the rules, we followed the indoctrination.
Well, let me ask you a question, Bob. What would happen if thousands upon thousands of soldiers in Iraq just said, screw it, we're not doing it anymore?
Guess what?
What?
They'd come home just like we did from Vietnam. Okay? It wasn't the marches in the streets that brought us home from Vietnam. You know what brought us home from Vietnam?
What?
You really want to know, Bob?
Yeah, I do.
We started fighting our officers, and we started saying, no, hell no, we won't go out there anymore. We won't go out there and...
I mean, did that really happened? You know, I'm going to sit...
It actually happened, Bob.
Going to sit in the hooch, ain't going to go nowhere.
No. Hey, we pointed our weapons at our leaders, and the leaders said, hey, hell no, if you ain't going, I ain't going either. And after a while, they decided, hey, it's time to get the hell out of here because our boys are turning against us. And if we do not turn against, and I mean turn against this leadership, if we do not turn, if we do not take a stand, and that's why I always say it, Bob, stand, people. Take a stand. If you got to die for your stand, then stand and die, but don't lay down and let them whip you like a dog. Stand up and fight back. If you die fighting, at least you die fighting. And that's what we did in Annam. We just said, it's enough. We've lost god-awful many, so many of my friends I begged and tagged and sent home. And finally we said, it's enough and it's time. We quit. We just quit, Bob. We just quit on them, and they realized they couldn't control us because we had the guns. And
is that because? Let me ask you, Bob. Was that because it was a conscript military, or could that happen in a so-called professional military as well?
It can happen, Bob. If you get to the point where you are pushed to the wall, like they're pushing these boys, and I swear to God, if I was there with them, I would lead them against my leaders, not against the Iraqis. The Iraqis have done nothing to deserve what we have done to them, Bob. Nothing. We did not. They did not invade us. We invaded them. They did not attack us. We attacked them. And if you cannot understand what I'm saying, then understand this. If a man attacks your family, what will you do? Will you defend, or will you lay down and let that man slaughter your family? And we are slaughtering, we are murdering, we are killing Iraqis and Iranians.
Did you see the story the other day? I heard Malloy mention it, where Iraqi women are being forced to turn to prostitution.
No, not women. Children.
Children, girls, children, sure, yeah.
Girls, young girls, 16 and younger. That is a girl at 16 is not a woman, Bob. She is a girl. She's a young lady. She's not even mature enough to make decisions for herself, but she's been pushed into it by the Bush administration. And that lying SOB that was on Mark Levine's program, that's why I called him a liar. And he knows he's a liar. He has no courage. And I would wish, I pray that there is a supreme being, a God, an Allah up there, that I can meet this man, this creature, this thing that called himself a United States Marine Corps major. I want to meet him on the battlefield. I want to meet him on a field of honor. And I swear to you, my dear friend, that in that battle, he will lose. He will lose more than his life, because I will take him into my hell, and I will take him down below the earth into that hell that everybody fears, and I will draw him, and I will quarter him, and I will march him through that, because he was not a Marine, not a United States Marine as I am, because I believe that I swore an oath to the United States Constitution and to no...
Not to a president, not to a person, not to a party, not to an ideology, but to the Constitution, Bob.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry that I, you know, that I little dust up between the blue and the gray.
Yep.
Yeah, the South and the North. None of us could understand why the South wanted to be free of a dictatorial democracy. I'm not talking about democracy.
No, I know it. Yeah, I know.
Democracy. A controlling central government. That is what they wanted to stop. They wanted states' rights, and they fought for states' rights, not for individual rights, but each state should choose its own path. But that's what the South fought for. And the North, and I have to say, I am a Yankee. I was born and raised a Yankee. And I'm not from the South, not born in the South anyway.
Well, there was a lot of misguided poppycock in there too.
There's a lot of misguided poppycock going on right now.
Well, precisely.
So we have to just wade through the
BS. Yeah, I got a stack of poppycock to wade into.
And realize that we are Americans, Bob. We are United States citizens. And
well, we won't be for long if this garbage in Iraq keeps up.
We'll be what they call world citizens or something.
I was talking with a very good, very intelligent friend of mine the other evening. Sadly, he doesn't have computer access, so he can't participate. I'd love to have his thoughts on the air, but he said this is what we've earned. He said this Iraq war will eventually be it will be recognized by history as the beginning of the end of the United States.
Probably, if we do not wake up, Bob. I mean, I heard a beautiful piece by a commentator on another station saying, hey, wake up, America. I mean, maybe it was Susan. I don't know. I love Susan. She's a strong and a good heart and a good, willing fighter against this regime that has done so much damage. And you know what? You are not alone, and we are not alone, and it is time that we grow together and get together. And you know, like Mark is a strong, first time I ever talked to him, but I wished I could have had this conversations I've had with you with him and told him how much I respect his intellect, his knowledge, and his ability to think outside of that box that they try to put.
Mark is a brilliant, brilliant man.
He's a beautiful young man. I mean,
real, live, honest to God genius is what Mark is.
Met him, I bet.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? I'd love to meet the both of you and sit down in the room with you and have a barbecue rib with you or something. Or just,
sounds
you know, just,
good, Bob.
Just be congenial, but you know what? Right now, we ain't got time to be congenial.
No, we don't.
We got time for only one thing. Either we stand up and we fight, or we lay down and we get kicked around like dogs, like this Democratic Congress we got in this Democratic Senate. They lay down and they just get kicked around like dogs by a master.
Well, but that it's so much better to take your kicking than to have George Bush come out and call you a liberal or something.
Oh God, call me a liberal. I'd love
No, but you get me. You get the idea, Bob. Hey Bob, I gotta roll on. I'll tell you what, stay by the speakers there. Before I take the next call, I got a story I want to share, and I want to make sure that you get to hear it. Because
all right, I'll kick them right back on. I'm gonna hang up now.
All right, you take care, Bob.
Love you much.
You too.
Yep,
later.
Bye.
Now this one has been rattling around in my skull for the better part of the day, and it's pretty damn sickening. A young man. Marine Corporal Adam Kokesh. Have you read this yet? Marine Corporal Adam Kokesh is separated from the Corps, honorably discharged. And this coming Monday, he is being hauled before a military panel of inquiry to have his discharge modified from honorable to less than honorable. He served, he went to Iraq, he did what he was told, he survived, he came home, he saw it. And I mentioned this story because the question was put up, what is going to happen to young Donald Hudson Jr., who wrote that letter? Well, this man, Corporal Adam Kokesh of the United States Marine Corps, was out. He was done. Had an honorable discharge for honorable service. He went to a protest last month marking the fourth anniversary of this god-awful war. He was photographed, and that photograph showed up in the Washington Post. His reserve commitment is up in less than 3 weeks. The panel is going to decide, as I said, whether to change his discharge status from honorable to other than honorable. If the status is changed, he loses health benefits, forced to repay more than $10,000 that he received under the GI Bill to get his undergraduate degree. He will be tormented for the rest of his days. Why? Because he wore a set of fatigues. I mean, we're not talking about he showed up at the protest in his dress blues. He and a couple of other fellows, Iraq veterans, showed up in their fatigues at a protest marking the fourth anniversary of the war. And the full weight of the United States Marine Corps is about to drop on this young man because he dared exercise the rights and freedoms guaranteed to him under the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America. Tell me we aren't living in a fascist dictatorship. Somebody, prove it to me. Prove to me that we are not living in a fascist dictatorship. Prove to me that it is not an element of fascism when a guy wearing a set of fatigues... Jesus, do you remember the Vietnam era? I know some. I was a kid. I saw the pictures. How many people showed up at protests wearing the basic OD green? Fatigues. Hell, in high school, I had them from the Army surplus store. Because they took a beating really well. So this guy shows up in a set of fatigues, probably the new Feldgrau. Gets his picture taken, and now, because he got his picture taken, he's going to have his discharge changed from honorable to other than honorable? By God, he earned those educational benefits. He earned them. Oh, Lord, he earned them. But he dared to exercise his right to free speech, his right to political speech, the most sacred form of speech available to a person in this country. And the Marine Corps, it wants to drop a big rock on him because they say that there's a rule that prohibits troops from wearing uniforms without authorization. So I suppose he was expected to write a Mother May I letter to the Commandant of the Corps. Somebody, help me. It does me no good here at the tender age of 44 to think that I'm spending the best part of my young adulthood. I still think of myself as a young adult. I'm not an old guy yet. Watching my nation, for which members of my family generations past have fought and died for, to watch my nation descend into the fascism that they fought and beat back and thought they had destroyed. Just let that rattle around in your noggin for a minute. They're going to change his discharge to other than honorable because he dared show up in a set of fatigues to stand and let those protesters know that they were not alone, that people in the military itself felt the same way that they do about this illegal, immoral, history-changing, democracy-killing war. God. So keep an eye out. The Dateline, the Dateline on this Associated Press story was today out of Kansas City, Missouri. And it says that his hearing will be Monday. Some of you guys that are better at timelining and keeping up with stuff, see if you can get tracks on this story and find out what happens Monday. I'm just astonished by this. He serves honorably, and he does not have the right to come back and say that that war was wrong and to do it in costume. The panel is going to be deciding Monday whether to change the status. That quick. Sunday, he doesn't owe $10,000. Sunday, he's a guy who stood, who went outside the wire and behaved himself with honor and followed orders. And Monday, he is something other than honorable. Not by any action of his own, but by the arbitrary decision of a bunch of desk generals and square knot admirals who haven't heard a shot fired in anger. That's disgusting. That is truly, truly disgusting. K-O-K-E-S-H, Adam Kokesh. I hope we can keep track of the story. Wow. It's about 3 minutes before the hour. We're going to take a break. Head for the top of the hour news when we come back. Light them up! Your phone calls are more than welcome. This is Conversation Radio. This is your chance to make yourself heard. Unique. Unique. In the radio spectrum. Please take advantage of that opportunity. The phone number is 304-658-5453. If you need us to cover the cost, it's 877-443-2366. Email roars in to bob@headonradio.com. We'll be back.
This is the Quality News Network. Russian President Vladimir Putin says his country's test firing of an intercontinental ballistic missile earlier this week was in response to the U.S. planned missile defense system in Europe. The White House indicated that Putin's remarks underscore the need for such a system. The Russian leader also criticized imperialism in global affairs, referring to the U.S. President Bush has revealed he expects American soldiers to be in Iraq for many years to come. He's compared his vision of the future in Iraq to be similar to that of South Korea. He made the announcement as the last of the troop surge, 21,500 U.S. combat personnel arrived in Baghdad. In Fallujah, a suicide bomber detonated himself in a line of potential police recruits this morning, killing 25 people and wounding 50 others. Also in Iraq, three more U.S. soldiers have been killed, bringing the monthly total to 119. That makes May one of the bloodiest months for American troops since the invasion in 2003. In Cuba, a Saudi Arabian prisoner at Guantanamo Bay has become the fourth detainee to commit suicide since the facility opened in 2002. 380 prisoners are held at the camp. Two have been charged with a crime. Atlanta attorney Andrew Speaker has been identified as the tuberculosis patient who took several international flights recently. The 31-year-old told a newspaper he knew he had the disease when he left for Europe to get married. Once in Rome, health officials told Speaker not to fly again, but he boarded a flight to Canada. Today it was also revealed that Speaker's new father-in-law works for the Centers for Disease Control researching TB. President Bush has proposed a meeting with the world's biggest economies to take action on cutting greenhouse gas emissions. While the president has so far opposed many European ideas on limiting global warming, he's positioning the U.S. to begin negotiations. Actor and former U.S. Senator Fred Thompson said he's testing the political waters for a campaign run as the Republican presidential candidate. The FBI says its annual crime report to be released next week will show an increase in murder, robbery, and other felonies for a second straight year. In Seattle, a man described as the world's most successful spammer has been indicted on 35 counts, including mail fraud and identity theft. Federal law enforcement agents say computer users may see an immediate decrease in spam. This is QNN.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
A Harry Potter theme park will open in Florida by 2009. The project was kept secret until today when author J.K. Rowling announced she's given the go-ahead. Warner Brothers and Universal Resorts will be recreating the magic world of her fictional wizard hero in Orlando. Russian cosmonauts have completed a 5.5-hour spacewalk to mount panels on the side of the International Space Station. The panels will protect it from collisions with space debris. Weather forecasters say Tropical Storm Barbara, currently off the coast of Oaxaca, can be expected to reach the resort town of Acapulco, Mexico, by Monday. And according to the Commerce Department, the economy's first quarterly growth was the worst showing in more than 4 years. The FTC has approved AstraZeneca's $15 billion acquisition of biotech firm MedImmune. The Anglo-Swedish pharmaceutical company says the deal will increase its drug portfolio and allow it to venture further into the biotech marketplace. Mobile phone manufacturer Motorola has also announced it will eliminate another 4,000 jobs this year as part of its plan to cut costs and raise profitability. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.01 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended down 5 points, the Nasdaq up 12, and the S&P ended flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's continue with one other story, and then we'll go right to the phones. This one just emailed to me today. Headline, Fort Lewis moves to monthly memorial. This is how bad it's gotten. Our news ninja Gene found this from the News Tribune. It's getting, I'm sorry, it's getting very difficult to talk about, because there's no, it's not like there are individual battles that we're told about over there. It's not, there's no battle for Hill 619, okay? There's, and that's one of the, it's so frustrating on a number of levels, because it's just every day, this is... What? See, I told you. But the truth is, there aren't any pitched battles. It's a matter of convoys going out, convoys getting blown up, and some convoys come home, and some convoys don't. And if that's not just the very definition of futility, I don't know what is. But at Fort Lewis, Washington, in May, Fort Lewis suffered its worst losses of the war. And Fort Lewis will no longer conduct, get this, will no longer conduct individual memorial ceremonies for soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Instead, they're going to have one big memorial once a month. You know, it's just like when you work at IBM. You don't get your individual birthday celebrated. They just have a birthday day when everybody whose birthday is in May gets celebrated, only in reverse and a hell of a lot more tragic. As much as we would like to think otherwise, I am afraid that with the number of soldiers we now have in harm's way, our losses will preclude us from continuing to do individual memorial ceremonies, Brigadier General William Troy wrote in a memo to commanders and staff last week. The new policy takes effect in June. There are 10,000 Fort Lewis soldiers in Iraq. And it gets to, you know, the brass is afraid. You can't have one for every fallen soldier, because then every two or three days the soldiers are showing up for another memorial, and it becomes more and more of a stark reality what a nasty little cesspool Iraq has become. What a failed policy, what a failed strategy, what an abject failure of military planning. And you can't, you know, so maybe they can keep it together if they just have to go to one memorial a month and there's 9 or 10 or 12 sets of boots there. Lord God. In his memo dated May 22nd, General Troy said he asked the post senior chaplain, Colonel Jack Van Dyken, to work out the details of the new policy. Quote, I see this as a way of sharing the heavy burdens our spouses and rear detachments bear while giving our fallen warriors the respect they deserve. It will also give the families of the fallen the opportunity to bond with one another, as they see others who share their grief. Oh, okay, it's not because we're dying like flies over there. It's not because the blood is being spilled in buckets. It's so that the families can share each other's grief. Oh, and by the way, have you noticed? And this goes back to the remember those 14 defining characteristics of fascism? You've seen it from time to time. One of those defining characteristics is the almost fetishistic adoration of the military. Have you noticed the vocabulary change? I picked up on it the Saturday before Memorial Day while we were working around the house. CNN was on, and they were touting, apparently the story was that they had, when they were embedded in Iraq, they went to some dude's used car lot in Kuwait and bought a used American Humvee, you know, one of the military styles. And they used that to go blazing across the sands in the invasion in March of 2003. And it was beat up and shot up and in pretty rotten shape. So CNN got together with some show, You've Been Overhauled, I think it is. And they redid it and they named it Warrior One. The Humvee was named Warrior One. And they made a big to-do about how beautiful it was, and they had some soldiers standing around going, oh, dang, that's nice. And it's traveling the country, helping our wounded warriors. Have you noticed that? That's when my pink little ears perked up, and I realized they're not calling them soldiers anymore. And then I read this story, and bang, there it is again, coming from Brigadier General Troy. Our warriors. They're not soldiers anymore. They're not citizens anymore. They're warriors because in this godforsaken, unmasculine, unforgivable war against Iraq, the people fighting it have to be recharacterized with something a little bit more ballsy, more testosterone infused. They're warriors. Pay attention. Look to the quotes that you see coming out of the military now. Watch them. They have been told, I guarantee you, you'll see it. They have been told to change the vocabulary that they use. They have to call them warriors now. As if they were some sort of Bantu tribesmen running around with spears. As if this was all just a set piece out of 300. What happened to soldiers? They used to be citizen soldiers when we had a conscript army, when the nation was threatened, like in the Second World War, and people were dreaded. They were citizen soldiers. But we've taken the citizenship away, as we have noted in the case of Corporal Kokesh. Now they're warriors. I mean, there it is. While giving the fallen warriors the respect they deserve. What are these, Sioux Braves? Warriors? I mean, Jesus, even the Greeks called theirs, you know, hoplites. But they have to be warriors because we have to conjure visions of Valhalla and people going hand to hand and seeing the and participating in the face to face carnage. That isn't what this is. This is machine guns and rocket propelled grenades and killing at a distance and killing from 40,000 feet or from 100 feet under the ocean. Warriors! It is dishonest and disingenuous. I take nothing away from the courage of those who serve and stand up and do this and follow orders, even if the orders are illegal and misbegotten. But you see, that's where the con is. That's where the fraud is. That's where the cheat is. We have to try to gin up and dummy up and fake up the language to somehow bolster the sick, shoddy, piss-poor nature of the origins and process and prosecution of this godforsaken occupation. It got so bad this, as far back as 2004, Fort Hood went to the monthly ceremony. They've lost more than 130 soldiers in Iraq. Fort Carson, Colorado, that has a bigger problem with mistreating mentally ill soldiers than in just about any other military installation in the United States, they hold their memorials every other Thursday afternoon. It's that regular. Van Dyken, the chaplain, said, "This is not an intent to streamline the process or in any way detract from honoring the soldiers. No, it's just a recognition, a real-time, real-world recognition, that if you keep having individual memorials, morale is going to go through the floor when the troops and their families finally begin to realize that they've been had by the Bush administration. Played like a 200-year-old fiddle with a bunch of patriotic hoopla and belly wash in the name of nothing more than a naked lust for power, control, and greed." God. Let's go to the phones. David's calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I have a quote for you to start out with.
Okay.
"When a cause comes along and you know in your bones that it is just, yet refuse to defend it, at that moment you begin to die. And I have never seen so many corpses walking around talking about justice."
Wow, who's that?
That would be Mr. Mumia Abu-Jamal, who is currently on death row right now.
Pretty
and
profound.
This is something to learn about. And here's where I want to let people understand something. When you say, "What can I do? I don't have the resources," don't want to hear it. And I'll tell you why I don't want to hear it. Mumia Abu-Jamal doesn't have electricity. He has barely electricity in his cell, right? He
yeah.
barely has a pen. But guess what he does? He fashioned himself a stylus, and he writes out his own commentary. But then he needs a way to distribute. So guess what else he does, Bob? He takes that commentary and he feeds it through a payphone with his own personal money that he earns. So he puts his commentaries on the web at prisonradio.org, and you can listen to them. And if you hear something in the background that sounds like a cell phone message, an automated message, that's the prison system.
Wow.
That's inspiration, and that is what you have to. That's what we have to take into consideration. We have computers, we have the voices, we have partly the airwaves, partly digital airwaves, whatever you want to call it. But we need to consider all of those things and realize that. People, we really haven't tried as a nation. We really haven't. A percentage of us, a slight percentage of us have. But we need to look at those examples always and look at the, and compare that with our lives. And you know what? If you fall short from that, don't be discouraged and totally shamed by it. Just learn from it. Gradually, step by step.
And just as you learn, try to take another step forward? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, just take another step forward. And
read that quote again, David.
"When a cause comes along and you know in your bones that it is just, yet refuse to defend it, at that moment you begin to die. And I have never seen so many corpses walking around talking about justice." This guy, every day, he puts out books, people. He still puts out books. And he put them on Amazon. You want to know why they want to kill him? Because he puts out books on Amazon. People are afraid that one of these books are going to be a bestseller. And his commentaries. The prison system couldn't shut him down, people. He puts out commentaries every month. 2 minutes. You know why they're only 2 minutes? Because that's the only time they allow you on the phone system.
Jesus. Almighty, that's astonishing.
I know. We can learn from this, and this is what we learn from this. When they shut off his electricity, and they barely keep on the lights in his cell, and they took away his pen because they said, hey, we don't want you committing suicide. Mumia Jamal was like, no problem, I'll just make a stylus out of this. You know, and that's.
What made them? What, the guy's fighting back. What makes him think that he's going to see that he's suicidal?
Because this is the country. You know what? When people say we've had a democracy and we're losing our democracy, that's not true. I believe we were in a polymerocracy, which is basically plastic to begin with. It was all basically plastic, and what it was the white people. And the middle class and the slightly privileged, we never heard the stories outside of that circle and that bubble. And eventually, when it caught up to us, we thought about it for a minute, but then we started focusing on something. Oh, this is funny. Jeff Foxworthy. Oh, look at this. Oh, look, Home Improvement's on.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, all of it was like the shadow that was creeping up on us all of this time. All of this time it was there. Everyone was, I mean, they would be screaming, and then they'd have somebody turn around and go, well, you must have did something to deserve that. And that was the answer. That was the answer. There was nothing else. There was no discussion. Nothing. All of the people, you know, when I listen to, like, when I listen to people, news anchors, and all of these people who claim to be fighting for the common man and all of this, I look at it, and I say, you know, eventually we're going to have to look at someone like Mumia Jamal, and people currently in incarceration, locked down, and not just say, well, they must have did something to deserve that. No, people, listen to what they have to say, and try to learn something from that, and realize that our country has always been at this state at some point, infected, and it's finally got to our region. That's really what it is.
Well, that's... Yeah, that's kind of a grim estimation, David. But far be it from me to be the only person grim on this on this network.
The grim on.
No, well, but
yeah,
I'm desperate to hang on to some level of optimism.
Here's the optimism to hang on to, and I don't mean to say this to be grim. I'm saying this. When you suddenly are faced with someone who is in a grimmer situation than you, and just like Mumia said, a lot of us aren't defending it. Some people are, and I commend them. I don't think I'm defending it, you know? I think every day, and I'm like, what do I want to give up here? What am I willing to give something up? And you know what I come to, Bob? This is what I come to. A lot of people, I just don't care about them. A lot of people, I just don't care about them because they're ignorant to it, and I start to think, and I say, you know, I understand that's cold blooded, but hey, I mean, if these people aren't going to stand up and do something, and I don't start to see some kind of actions or anything, you know, part of my spirit is just like, am I starting to die now? I guess I believe in futility to a degree. If I'm like that, we're only on here for how many years? For how many years on the planet, you know?
Right.
And after a while, you're starting to think, what if you just get there, and then all of a sudden everything falls apart? But I guess to take into consideration, even if it's a lie, and even if it's false, and we never get there, it makes somebody's day a little easier, I guess.
No, but I think I understand a little bit of what you're saying, David, because
yeah.
If somebody will not move to... Never mind God helps those who help themselves.
Right.
If someone won't move to help themselves, what call do they have on any of us for our goodwill or our help. I understand some of that.
You know, it's like what you were saying before with the companies. Just to give an example, I got a new computer and it's an Apple. So I look on the back of my remote. You know what it says? This is ridiculous, people. It doesn't say distributed in China. It says designed in California, made in China. What the hell?
Was it made in China?
Yes.
But it says designed in California.
What the hell's designed in California? Did they just pick up some like marijuana and weed and say, dude, we can make a remote, and then just send the blueprints to?
No, I know.
Well,
that kind of goes back to the beginning of things last night. You know, the toothpaste says distributed by Camden, New Jersey.
But then again, the question is this: what did we do about it? You know.
Well, see, that's the thing. We're over a barrel, David. They've got us to a point. It's not. I mean, with very few exceptions, we can make an attempt. I mean, the next time somebody needs a new pair of jeans or a new pair of sweats or a polo shirt or a button down Oxford or something, they can go to nosweatshop.com.
I got an antidote for you. I went to my parents came back from Bar Harbor. That's yuppie.
Oh yes, never been there, but well familiar.
Yeah, you know, but you can stay there for a little bit if you're middle class. That's the way it works. Then you got to go back to your.
David, when you go to Bar Harbor, do you have to talk with your teeth clenched?
No, but
okay, just checking.
But you do have to realize that it is an alternate universe, you know. I mean, and when they went to Bar Harbor, they came back and they're like, "Look," and then they showed me their shoes and they're like, "These are made in China." And I was like, "They're cheap in plastic." Why?
You're in Maine. David, dang it! You're at the head. You're there at the home of L.L. Bean, but L.L. Bean's made in China now too, isn't it?
No, I asked them, and see, this is a symptom we all suffer from, people. I asked them, I said, why the hell did you get those shoes if you know where they were made and they were cheap to begin with? And they were plastic. You know what they told me? They go, because they were cheap.
Oh, Joe Bajant talked a little bit about this last night.
Yeah, I it's a symptom, you know? It's an infection that everyone is infected by. We all get something cheap in our days, all of us, and you know what? Eventually, you're going to have to look at it and go, no, I can't keep doing this.
Well, yeah, look, I'm looking here at the equipment in the studio, and please understand, I had no choice, okay?
Right.
Some of these pieces are manufactured in the United States. All the stuff that comes from Henry Engineering's American, the tiny tool stuff. But when it came down to getting a good mixing board to do this the network with,
yeah.
Everything was Chinese except what I bought. And I went for the Allen & Heath because it was made in England by people who have been making boards for The Who and Pink Floyd for years and years and years.
Right.
And it is held up and served wonderfully. But there's no way of... I know. If I wanted to go and buy a receiver for the living room...
Right.
God help me trying to find an American one.
I used to be
an absolute, and I know you're a bit of an audiophile, so you'll probably identify with this, David.
Right.
I used to be a Klipsch junkie. You know what Klipsch speakers are?
I don't think so. Are they like the same quality as Bose and everything?
Beyond that, and they were manufactured in Arkansas, and there were Klipsches and Klipsch horns, and a buddy of mine once took the wire. Because they guaranteed that you could not blow a Klipsch up, and a buddy of mine stripped the wires on the speaker wire, hooked it into a two-prong plug, and plugged, and, you know, he was really kind of out of it that night. You know, he was in a place where brains don't need to go. He decided he wanted to listen to what electricity sounded like, so he plugged the Klipsch speaker into the wall. And it lasted for, a good minute or so before it fried.
Right.
And he wrote off and told, dude, I plugged it into the wall. He said, it blew up. They said, we're sending you a new one.
And they did.
These things were amazing. I was in Best Buy a couple of months back, and they are an authorized Klipsch dealer now. It used to be you had to move heaven and earth to get a set of Klipsches. Now you just walk into Best Buy. Guess what it says on them, David? Used to say made in Arkansas.
Yeah, but it doesn't say made in Arkansas anymore.
Designed in Arkansas.
You see? See, this is... This is another thing. I mean, you know what? If we really did have that kind of serious blood boiling, it's not there yet, Bob. It's not yet. It's close to boiling, but it's not there yet. We would be on the phones with these companies and saying, what the hell are you doing? and their phone lines would be slammed across the country. Can you imagine if someone did that?
Yeah, we don't have time for that. No, dang it! You know, we're busy. We're busy programming the TiVo.
I know.
No, we don't have TiVo.
You know, Bob, before I go, speaking of American Made, I just wanted to ask you if you listened to any of that Elliott Smith.
I haven't yet. No, I'm sorry.
Got to tell you, people, if you go to sweetadeline.net, you're going to listen to a genius who killed himself. He stabbed himself with a steak knife, but still, he was a genius.
My God, that's some determination.
No, you stabbed yourself. I shouldn't laugh at that, but you stab yourself with a steak knife. I mean, that's gold, though. That's physically gold for a cult legend right there.
Yeah, that's wanting out real bad, David.
I know. You could talk to someone. You could talk about all these artists, and you go say, yeah, and this artist, he can open up time portals and whatever. You'd be like, oh, really? Yeah. And then all of a sudden you go, but this artist I have right here, he stabbed himself with a steak knife. What?
Huh? Yeah. But then, you know, go back in American history. Go read the accounts of the end of Meriwether Lewis, David.
Oh.
He wanted to die real bad. He basically, in a little roadhouse tavern somewhere along the Natchez Trace in Tennessee, did himself in much the same fashion.
Speaking of odd medical anomalies, did you hear about that guy that had inverted decapitation?
Huh?
And he still survived. Inside his skull, inside his skull and between the spinal cord, it separated. And it wasn't outside, it was inverted.
Oh, Jesus.
but he still survived, and they managed to do something. Maybe they made him into, like, Wolverine and put adamantium bones in him or something.
Oh, stop it. David, you take care, my friend.
All right, later.
Later. Bye now. You guys are quick on the draw. We're trying to cut down on the sound. But you gotta give Agnes a chance. It's about 27 and a half minutes before the hour. We should probably take a little bit of a break. Yeah. What about those new, that new show coming to the Horn? What do you think of that? Growing all the time, huh? You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll free if you need us to pick up the freight. If you can do it yourself, 304-658-5453. We're right here. And it's your chance to be heard. This is Conversation Radio on America's Liberal Voice, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jesse Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed 3 brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, 1/3 of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I, thank you.
Over 100 faith-based treatment centers are intended to make you straight. Gay kids as young as 13 are committed against their will. Psychiatrists are appalled. You should be too. Gay Conversation Radio, coming in June.
Okay, we're back. I don't know how to define. Maybe this malaise that I'm experiencing has something to do with fear or dread. Do you get the idea in the national zeitgeist that there's something, you know, that it's a case of something wicked this way comes? Oh, I know, wicked's already here. Wicked is wearing its dancing shoes. No, but there's something worse on the way. There's something just coming. And, you know, I'm not one of the, I don't tend to believe in, hocus pocus or, you know, I'm not one, read the book. You know, I'm a reality based kind of guy. I just am. But sometimes there's just this feeling in your gut. Do you get it, Agnes? I mean, just a nod, whatever. Yeah, you've got it. I just got this emailed to me by a couple of different folks. One of them, our friend Cindy, asking, "Do you think this might finally get the Republicans thinking about a bill of impeachment, or maybe that whole 'upon the disability of the president shall be removed,' yada yada yada." Dear Leader has gone around the damn bend again. And this is, okay, this isn't Capitol Hill Blue. This is sourced, among other things, from a story in the Dallas Morning News, you know, that has a real editor and everything who looks and goes, You know, they like to have things truthful. It's in the Dallas Morning News. Let me say that again. This is from the Dallas Morning News. You know, belly of the beast, all of that. The particular report comes from Think Progress. They excerpt it and provide a link to the Dallas Morning News story. Headline, report in meeting, quote, wild-eyed Bush thumped chest while repeating, I am the president. Jesus, it's turned into Greystoke, the legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes. Where, half of me is the Earl of Greystoke. The other half is wild. Georgie Ann Geyer writes today in the Dallas Morning News about President Bush's strange behavior during a recent meeting with quote-unquote friends of his from Texas. I mean, this is the Bush, this is the Midland Mafia, okay? This is, I mean, these are the freaks who said, you know, I'd be a great governor and an even better president. Georgie Ann Geyer writes, by all reports, President Bush is more convinced than ever of his righteousness. Mm-hmm. And they've got it bolded at Think Progress. Friends of his from Texas were shocked recently to find him nearly wild-eyed, thumping himself on the chest three times while he repeated, I am the president! I am the president! I am the president! He also made it clear he was setting Iraq up so his successor could not get out of, quote, our country's destiny. Oh, Agnes, baby. Find me the Dr. Strangelove quotes. And they go on at Think Progress and say, this is the second time in recent weeks that accounts have surfaced of Bush lashing out or ranting in private meetings when responding to criticism of his Iraq policy. Chris Nelson of the Nelson Report offered a similar account earlier this month. Here's that quote. Some big money players up from Texas recently paid a visit to their friend in the White House. The story goes that they got out exactly one question, and here we are with the bold again. The rest of the meeting consisted of the president in an extended whine, a rant actually, about no one understands me. The critics are all messed up. If only people would see what I'm doing, things would be okay, etc., etc. This is called a bunker mentality, and it's not attractive when a friend does it. When the friend is the president of the United States, it can be downright dangerous. It's look! You out there, Rick? Dr. Rick, you out there? It's intervention time! The little sociopath that the Rick Goodner and I diagnosed a couple of years ago has finally just... They don't understand me. It's all messed up. If only they knew what I was trying to do, they'd see how sane I am. I'm not crazy. Everybody else is crazy. They're the crazy ones. Jesus tells me to. You know, you ever seen the movie version of The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, where Hitler goes on this bender about the German people never deserved me. If only I had been born English. The English people, they would understand. They would know what it was I was planning to do. They would understand the greatness. The German people do not understand me.
This is that!
Oh, Godwin's Law. He's done it again. He compared George Bush to Hitler. It's all over now. This is just astonishing. Think Progress goes on and writes, like the tearful House Minority Leader John Boehner, Bush needs to channel his bottled-up emotions towards a more worthy end, winding down the war in Iraq rather than defending the status quo. But there it is. There it is. Once and for all, there it is. We've had evidence of this going back, way back into the first term of this fiend. This profoundly, criminally, mentally ill man. He is screaming at his own people now.
God willing, we will prevail in peace and freedom from fear and in true health through the purity and essence of our natural fluids. God bless you all.
Yeah. That funny, funny movie isn't funny anymore. Oh, and by the way, I've got some audio here for you that I want to share with you real quick. This morning on National Public Radio, one of their reporters interviewed the administrator of NASA. Have you heard about this? Michael Griffin. And it was sort of a he said, she said. It was kind of a cat fight because a man named Michael Easterbrook had come on and said that NASA's got its priorities all fouled up and needs to be spending more time on global warming and figuring out solutions to global climate change. Now, you remember, NASA was where the Bush administration sent. You remember the fraud that came out? Said, I got me a degree from Texas A&M. Yeehaw! Go Aggies! He claimed to have a degree from Texas A&M. Turned out he didn't. He was just a liar. And this is the guy who was put in charge of communications coming in and going out of NASA. And he put out the memo saying that any scientist wishing to talk about any issue would have to clear it with him, and that no one was to ever, 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 ever say global warming again. Remember that? I remember that. I know you remember that. And then the guy got busted and lost the job. Well, he may have lost the job, but the message got through. And it came out in this discussion on NPR today, credit NPR, in which they asked Michael Griffin, the administrator of NASA, about whether NASA should be more actively engaged in coming up with solutions to global warming, global climate change. Well, this was his answer.
To assume that it is a problem is to assume that the state of Earth's climate today is the optimal climate, the best climate that we could have or ever have had, and that we need to take steps to make sure that it doesn't change.
Screaming it?
First of all, I don't think it's within the power of human beings to assure that the climate does not change, as millions of years of history have shown. And second of all, I guess I would ask which human beings, where and when, are to be accorded the privilege of deciding that this particular climate that we have right here today, right now, is the best climate for all other human beings. I think that's a rather arrogant position for people to take.
We may have to play that again.
Again, again.
No, Teletubby, not yet. Not again, again. Is that sinking in? This guy says that we shouldn't do anything about global warming because, well, you know, we really have no idea whether or not this is the best climate, and who the hell are we to say it's the best climate? I mean, it's really kind of a Voltaire-esque approach to global warming. You know, it was Voltaire who talked about living in the best of all possible worlds in Candide. This guy's in charge of a $16, $18 billion space program, and well, you know, who are we to say that this is the best climate and we can't allow the climate to change? Yeah, we're not picking out curtains, Michael Griffin. This affects the future of the planet. And if you want to, you can go to npr.org, click on Morning Edition, and you'll find the headline there. You can listen to the whole thing. There are other parts where this goober says that, well, it's like pulling teeth to get it out of him. He said, well, you know, I have been told that global warming is real, And I do realize that the great consensus of the weight of scientific opinion is that the warming is caused by human activity. And it's my understanding that, yes, in the 20th century, the temperature of the planet went up about 1 degree Celsius. And then this clip comes along. Well, who are we to say this is the best climate? And this climate, it can't change. This is where they are now. Now they acknowledge it. Yeah, it's real. Yeah, we did it. But we're just turning the corner. There's going to... play the theme song from Annie again, Agnes. It's going to be even better. It's going to be warmer. We'll grow mangoes in Manitoba. God almighty. The idiots are among us. You want to scream. Oh, there'll be sun.
Just thinking about tomorrow clears away the cobwebs and the sorrow. Till there's none.
Till you're sunburned.
The day that's gray.
Oh, stop it. Yeah, it's my fault. I'm sorry, but and this is being spun in the right-wing world as, hey, that's a great observation. My friends, this is a brilliant observation by NASA Administrator Michael Griffin. After all, it's a bit presumptuous of it, isn't it? To suggest that we humans know better than God what the temperature of the planet should be? Holy cats. Now, NASA's backtracking for all they're worth, but, Sean Hannity, that pathetic life excuse for a haircut just got all damp in his maiden forms over it. Oh my! Go back to it, Agnes. Go back to it. Let this sink in.
To assume that it is a problem is to assume that the state of Earth's climate today. Is the optimal climate, the best climate that we could have or ever have had, and that we need to take steps to make sure that it doesn't change.
Now, wait. To assume that it's a problem is to assume that this is the best climate. That's the kind of stuff that gets you a D- in freshman philosophy. It doesn't follow one from the other. What we know, what we have observed, this is not a good, better, best analysis. This is an analysis of the world as it exists right now and looking at what this temperature change is actually doing to the planet. It's not a value judgment. This is not a faith-based analysis, Griffin, you goon. It's not a question of faith. It's not a question of determining. They had a better climate during the Little Ice Age. Yep, definitely better climate. No. And then to hear the right winger, my friends, it's only a 1 degree centigrade change. It's a 1 degree Celsius change. So what? It's one stinking degree. You know what? I wish Russia's internal body temperature would go up one stinking degree Celsius and stay there for a few weeks. We wouldn't have a Rush problem anymore. How about 3 degrees Celsius, Rush? What happens if your internal body temperature goes up only 3 degrees? What happens to you? Your brain boils! Just 3 degrees. 1 degree Fahrenheit. 98.6 is normal. You go up to 100 degrees, you feel like walking death. And that's a degree Fahrenheit. That's not a degree Celsius. Somebody that lives in Celsius land, am I wrong? What's the body temperature in centigrade? And what if it goes up 1 degree? You're really, really sick if it goes up 1 degree, aren't you? And yet, it's all just casual. That's only 1 degree. That's just 1 degree.
First of all, I don't think it's within the power of human beings to assure that the climate does not change.
Oh, wait! It's not within the power of human beings to make sure that the climate does not change. It is, however, within the capability of human beings to stop changing the climate. See, this is where they take the rational science and turning it on its head. Well, the climate's going to change no matter what we do. No, damn it, because we're the ones changing the climate. It's verifiable. Out of Tom Holland's wonderful book, Rubicon, there's a footnote talking about core drilling in Greenland that shows how much garbage the Romans, pre-industrial, ancient Rome, pumped into the air mining silver in Spain. You can see it. It's measurable. It's quantifiable. It clouded Europe all the way to Greenland. And they were only doing it in Spain. Imagine what the cores look like from the beginnings of the Industrial Revolution in England and Germany and France, when everything had a smokestack and all those smokestacks were burning coal and pumping it into the atmosphere. No bags, no scrubbers, no nothing. Just putting the filth into the air. And this guy thinks he's a scientist, says that, well, you know, we can't keep the climate from changing. A little bit more, and then we'll quit.
As millions of years of history have shown, and second of all, I guess I would ask which human beings, where and when, are to be accorded the privilege of deciding that this particular climate that we have right here today, right now, is the best climate for all other human beings.
Okay, I'll answer your question, Mr. Griffin, Dr. Griffin. How about we let the human beings who won't be here 20 years from now, if this crap continues, make that decision? How about we let the poor people who are suffering the brunt of this make that decision? How about we let the shoeless hillbillies like me make that decision, Mr. Griffin? Seeing as how it's our state, it's our Appalachian Mountains, the oldest mountains on the planet, Mr. Griffin, that are being destroyed to pump this crap into the air. How about you let us make that decision, since we're the ones that are losing our damned homes over it? Oh, screw you with a drill bit, Mr. Griffin. Now, we got to go to the news. We'll come back and take phone calls. 877-443-2366, 304-658-5453, if you can bear the freight yourself. I promise, we'll do phone calls. I got one more Griffin clip, but maybe, I don't know if I can stand it. This guy's giving me a headache. I'm going to have to save this clip for John in the morning. You listening, John? Is this thing giving you an aneurysm? This is America's liberal voice. This is the Head On Radio Network, the horn. It's your voice. Make it heard. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is a Quality News Network. Atlanta attorney Andrew Speaker has been identified as the tuberculosis patient who took several international flights recently. The 31-year-old told a newspaper he knew he had the disease when he left for Europe to get married. Once in Rome, health officials told Speaker not to fly again, but he boarded a flight to Canada. Today it was also revealed that Speaker's new father-in-law works for the Centers for Disease Control, researching TB. At a Moscow news conference, Russian President Vladimir Putin accused the U.S. of initiating a new arms race with its imperialism. He continued to say his country's test firing of an intercontinental missile was in response to the U.S. planned missile defense system in Europe. Iran's chief nuclear negotiator, has met with the EU chief in Madrid, but no real progress was made in the talks to shut down Iran's nuclear program. The two, however, agreed to meet again soon. And President Bush expects American soldiers to be in Iraq for many years to come. He compared his vision of the future in Iraq to be similar to that of South Korea. He made the announcement as the last of the troop surge, 21,500 U.S. combat personnel arrived in Baghdad. In Fallujah, a suicide bomber just detonated himself in a line of potential police recruits this morning, killing 25 people and wounding 50 others. In Iraq, three more U.S. soldiers have been killed, bringing the monthly total to 119. That makes May one of the bloodiest months for American troops since the invasion in 2003. Former spy Valerie Plame Wilson is suing the CIA to allow her to publish her memoirs. In March, top White House staffer Louis Scooter Libby was convicted of lying about conversations with the media that revealed Plame Wilson's identity as an undercover agent with the organization. And the FBI says its annual crime report to be released next week will show an increase in murder, robbery, and other felonies for a second straight year. President Bush proposed a meeting with the world's biggest economies to take action on cutting greenhouse gas emissions. While the president has so far opposed many European ideas on limiting global warming, he's positioning the U.S. to begin negotiations. The nation's economy had its worst growth since 2002. A report by the Commerce Department showed growth in January through March slowed to a crawl. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A Harry Potter theme park is slated to open in Florida by 2009. The project was kept secret until today when author J.K. Rowling announced she's given the go-ahead. Warner Brothers and Universal Resorts will be recreating the magic world of her fictional wizard hero in Orlando. Blooming algae has polluted a lake in eastern China and set off panic buying of bottled water. The lake provides drinking water for some 5 million inhabitants. The blue-green algae occurs naturally but grows quickly and eventually makes the water quality too bad to drink. Weather forecasters say Tropical Storm Barbara, currently off the coast of Oaxaca, Mexico, can be expected to reach the resort town of Acapulco by Monday. And it's good news for investors of Dell Computers, whose net income defied forecasters and rose to 0.34 cents a share. Dell employees are receiving bad news, however, as the number two PC maker announced a 10% job cut. That's about 8,800 workers over the next 12 months. Mobile phone manufacturer Motorola has announced it will also eliminate another 4,000 jobs this year as part of its plan to cut costs and raise profitability. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.18 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow ended down 5 points, the Nasdaq closed up 12, and the S&P ended flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, we cruise on and... Yeah, apparently human body temperature in degrees Celsius is about 36.4 degrees. You get to 37.4, you feel terrible. Hey, Rush, care to find out? Ugh. And I've got an email here about you heard the story on in the top of the hour news about the algae bloom in the lake that provides water for 5 million Chinese people. It's abominable in other places too. China's environmental situation continues to deteriorate. This from our buddy Robert in Japan. With major rivers and lakes clogged with heavy discharges of industrial waste, the country's environment watchdog said Tuesday. Pollution worsened in many parts of the country in the first quarter of the year, the State Environmental Protection Administration's deputy director, Pan Yue, was quoted as saying by Xinhua News Agency. What do they expect? You know, please give up the notion that China is somehow a communist country. It is a fascist dictatorship operating on a model of almost pure, unbridled, rampant capitalism. And for those, you know, I'm not trying to be a downer or anything, but look, we're doing it to them. They're selling us the goods because we're demanding the goods be sold. We've hung a bunch of bad paper on them. They're carrying our debt. And, you know, once again, it's not the rich people, it's the poor people, poor working stiffs that are getting poisoned in the process. Working people. So, you know, God. I got an email in here from our friend Marty, who notes in regard to the Michael Griffin audio I just played a little bit there. Marty notes, one thing Griffin said is going to get him in trouble with the faith-based community. He said millions of years, not the 6,000 that the nation's fundamentalists like forcing down people's throats. Just an amusement. Poor fella can't win, can he? Let's go to the phones. I spoke his name and he calls in. Robert, calling from Japan. Hey, welcome to the program, Robert. Robert, are you there?
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Okay. It's a nice day. Still springish and still surviving.
Good.
So.
I think we're having...
I was just listening to you about... you still there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Go ahead. I think we've got a weird connection, Robert.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay. I'm hearing your audio.
Huh. We don't have any...
Let's call back again, okay?
Yeah, we'll try that again. Okay. Bye now. Gremlins in the phone lines. Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Peter and Bob.
How are you?
Well, a minute ago you were talking about the Dr. Strangelove, and you're sitting there going, where's General Ripper? Damn it, where's General Ripper when you need him? You know?
Yeah.
No, the one that got me was the thing talking about this army base now where they're going to have once a month ceremonies.
Right.
Funerals.
Yeah, just one. Yeah, hit that a little bit ago.
It's like, well, why even have the ceremony? We'll just have the pictures out there and say we had one. You know, no one.
Yeah, put up a billboard. Have done with it.
You know, I was thinking this the other day when we were talking about, everybody was talking about Sandy Sheehan. You know, now think of this. Now, unless you've got a family member that's in this right now, other than Casey Sheehan, let's see, Jessica Lynch, Pat Tillman, or probably good old Lindy England. Other than somebody colonel and above, you can't name a person that's in the Army or in the war.
No.
This is the most depersonalized war there's ever been. You know, we don't want anybody to be, you know, to be seen. We just want them to be seen, you know, from behind. We're going to show you their front because we don't want to show you their faces. We're going to show you behind because they're just soldiers. They're not anybody's children. They're just soldiers.
Yeah.
You know, that way, they, like I say, they can dehumanize them. They're just numbers. But the thing you were talking about a minute ago about the news break was, you know, they're going to have this thing next coming up with about the global warming. I forgot we're not supposed to use that term.
Don't let it happen again.
Well, you do know that apparently now Bush wants benchmarks for this. You know, we want benchmarks. No, nothing to support it. We don't want any punishments.
We want
it all voluntary.
And we don't want any. We don't want to sign any treaties or nothing.
Oh no! It's like sometimes it'd be interesting if people would go back and look at the Bush record in Texas, where he had a voluntary system, you know, for polluters. And in all the years he was governor, I think one company took him up on it. And that was it.
Wow.
You know, we're not going to tell you you have to. We just like you to, you know, just to be nice.
Yeah, just say you're doing it, okay?
Yeah.
Just say you love me. Yeah.
It's like, at least put the garbage can out front so we can throw the plastic cups away. You know, something along those lines. Well, then the other one we're getting right now is down here. I'm sure we're getting it, and I'm sure I'm seeing it national. It's the whole Fred Thompson thing. And it's like, oh, gosh, please, somebody that knows what's going on, talk to them. Oh, God, I'm sitting there going, well, let's see.
But would you be surprised if he decided to run?
Oh,
it's,
no.
It's not like these people are substance-based or reality-based.
I know. You know, but just everybody remember these fun little, a few little facts just for the fun of it. This is the Republican Party that hates lawyers. Now, just remember, this is Fred Thompson, who's been a lawyer for better than 30-plus years.
Well, he was minority counsel in the Watergate Committee.
So that's so you're talking 72,
yeah.
73. So you know what I mean? We're talking 30-plus years. Then, the one thing that most people don't know is he's been a lobbyist for about 18 years. When the law and the acting took a little slow turn, he became a lobbyist. And I haven't pulled it up, but it'd be interesting to look and see who all he's lobbied for. You know, it's sort of like the thing, you know, with Giuliani. You know, we've all been playing, you know, these things with Rudy's personal life. Oh, I just can't wait, though, till they start digging into Giuliani Inc.
Oh, you mean Thompson?
No, I'm talking about Rudy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean? But I'm talking about Thompson, though. Look at who he's been a lobbyist for, the same way that they're going to start looking at Rudy and see who he's been working for
his
company.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, and I saw one of those lists not too long back, Luke. The people that Fred Thompson has lobbied for, let's just put it this way. The Girl Scouts aren't on the list.
No, it's all corporate. You know what I mean? There's no grassroots lobbying here. No.
No, that's why I had to borrow Lamar Alexander's flannel shirt and go rent that red truck.
Well, so I say that's not my. I'm sure they showed one on one of the shows I saw about him the other day. They were showing some old Senate footage when he was running, showing the pickup truck, and it's like, tell him it's a leased truck. He doesn't own a red truck. Well, he may now, but during the election cycle, they went down and leased him a truck. You know, his campaign supporter up here, and I can't think what the guy's name was. Is Ron? I can't think of the last name. He was on one of the shows one time, and they asked him about it. He said, oh, yeah, I went down to Chattanooga and leased the truck for 6 months.
Jeez. You know, I drove through Lawrenceburg a couple of times on the way back and forth, and usually I notice the home of Senator Fred Thompson sign, and it makes me want to retch. I don't think I saw the sign this time.
Well, it's hard to say. You know how it is. Law and Order's numbers have been down.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the Republican Party.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's one of those things that somebody said, well, he's an actor on Law and Order. I said, what actor? Have you ever watched him on Law and Order? He sits behind a desk, talks for about 5 minutes or two in the whole show, and that's it. But dear God, he could do that from home.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, we can already tell what the Thompson the candidacy will be like. I mean, we're going to get more. I don't know. Reagan had a bear walking through the woods. What's he going to have? A camel?
Oh God, I hate to think. Oh, did you see the thing? That one of the things that they're finding out about Fred. You know, Fred was apparently is one of the big people behind this whole thing, trying to get scooter leniency.
Yeah.
You know, he was one of the ones raising money for Scooter and all this stuff. So like I say, there's going to be some interesting.
Well, who did he get brought on board to shepherd the nomination of through the Senate? Remember that a few months ago?
Was one of the judges, wasn't it Alito?
That's what I'm thinking.
It
wasn't Robertson. It wasn't Harriet.
I want to think it was Alito, that he was the one, you know, sort of taking him around, you know what I mean, introducing him, you know, pressing the flesh, as they say. But, you know, it's just some of this stuff, you know, when you see it, you're just kind of sitting there going, reality check, please. You know, it's like people come up for air. It's like, I hope that, you know, when this goes, they'll look into his Senate career and find out he didn't do much. I mean, you know, we say Lamar, you know, if he stands in the wrong place, will fade into the background. You know, it's one of those things.
They have to go thump Lamar on the back of the head every now and then just to see if he's alive.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you have to wonder every once in a while with Lamar if they go up there and just stick the mirror under his nose. Like, yeah, still here. Okay. But, you know, it's one of those things that the two of them have been, like, say, it was like do nothing and do less.
Well, see, I was driving up I-65 through Tennessee, Luke, and I was just looking, you know, and I-65 goes through some beautiful countryside, you know, where there's about 6 inches of topsoil on top of three miles of limestone, and the old saying was that a Murray County the leg bone of a Murray County mule could turn a musket ball because of all the calcium.
Oh,
and
God,
it's,
yeah.
But it's beautiful rolling countryside, and I'm looking at the houses and everything, and I'm thinking, these people put Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander into the Senate. What the hell's wrong?
And you see what a firebrand old Bob's been.
Yeah, I did, yeah, just lightened up, isn't he?
It's like I say, I've seen Lamar's name mentioned more, and Lamar ain't done squat.
But that's okay, because pretty soon on I-65, I crossed into Kentucky. And then I got to start thinking about Jim Bunning and Mitch McConnell.
Oh, God. Well, now, as I understand it, Mitch is one of the people they're going after this next time, the next cycle, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we'll see who they find somebody. And, you know, we were talking about this before. Right about now, and starting the summer, I guess, the Democratic Party had better already have the people lined up.
Yeah.
Who they want to run.
And do a little house cleaning, too, because I was doing some reading in the Commercial Appeal in the Tennessee about Miss Senator Ophelia Ford.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Time to clean our own house.
Oh, I agree. I mean, well, you know, I saw they were showing tonight. Oh, you'll love this one. Guess who went over to Iraq and was wearing his helmet and had essentially his Michael Dukakis moment?
Who?
Our favorite senator of all, Gentleman Joe.
Yeah.
He was over there and had this helmet on, looked like a bike helmet. And, you know, it was just one of the things. I was just sitting there going, gee, you know, you look worse than Dukakis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, look stupid, Joe. Do that for us, would you?
You do it so well, Joe. You know what I mean. It's a real, real pleasure. We want to thank you for that.
But I read that story about Senator. And this is, you know, this is Harold Ford's auntie.
Oh yeah.
And did you catch the story about her falling off the stool in the bar?
Oh yeah. So well, like I say, the Ford family, Harold and his dad, I think are pretty okay. But the rest of the family, you know, that is, you can't pick your relatives. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some people need to, you know, like I say, some people need to tell them, you know, you people need to go away for a while.
You know? Well, Ophelia got so drunk in a bar, she fell off the bar stool. When contacted by the press about it, she said, my anemia was acting up.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a side effect of anemia.
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe 100 proof anemia.
I know. Now, I tell you somebody sometime, if you ever want to get a good interview, is the person who replaced Harold. You ought to interview Steve Cohen.
I'm working on that. I'm working on that hard.
Because
I thought he acquitted himself quite well interviewing Alberto Fredo.
Oh, yeah. Most people would not think of it, but Steve Cohen probably is about as liberal as you're going to find in this area. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? And people down there know it. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. But let me go back to what we were on to a minute ago.
Yeah.
I know we're running short. But like I say, the Democrats have better already have who they want picked. And like I say, over this summer, whoever they've got picked need to start challenging the people they're going after. Because like I say, on this stuff on Iraq, on this stuff, you know, on immigration, and all this stuff, you know, wherever we need to start drawing the lines in the sand. Right now, you know, don't wait till let them get too close to the election and say, oh, now this is my opinion. No, we want them on the record now saying what they think. So, you know, like I say, so in 6 months when they say, no, I never said that, you can play the tape for them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let me let you go, bud, because I know you're waiting for the fellow from Japan to call back, and I don't want to take up his time.
All right. Thanks, Luke. Take care. Bye now. All right. Let's do go back to Robert and see if we did any better this time. You there, Robert?
Yes. Sorry about that.
That's okay. 1,000 times better now, right?
Yes. So, you were talking about the global warming and pollution and stuff. We just had a taste of that last Sunday. We had 58 schools that we had a sports day.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the biggest days for elementary schools and junior high schools. And grandparents come, the parents come, and they all watch their kids do races and dances and stuff on Sundays. And so we're all there, we're all assembled, ready to go, ready to watch the show. And then suddenly over the loudspeaker, the principal says, the sports day has been canceled, please go home. And the reason for that was because of the pollution. Now, the official result was it was pollution from China, but it was actually just Japanese pollution and the ozone and the temperature that came together to affect a very highly ultraviolet ray effect. So it was very dangerous to be outdoors. But 58 schools all throughout Kyushu were all closed. I mean, all the sports days were canceled, and everybody was told to not go outside because it was simply too dangerous.
Well, is all the coal filth in the air coming you guys' way, or does it blow over? Does it blow westward mostly?
Well, I mean, two weeks ago, I was on the chat room showing another situation that actually did come from China, and this was the Gobi Desert sand and the Chinese pollution that came over to Japan and really made it quite smoggy and dirty, and it continued all the way over to California. And this plume stretched from Alaska all the way down to California. I mean, that's how big it was.
That's just amazing. And when they, you know, what's the current statistic, Robert? The Chinese are bringing one old-style, old-school, super dirty, filthy coal-fired power plant on per week.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah, I mean, my boss went there to Shanghai, and he said it was really—it's almost like walking around a city that's in fog. And his Chinese host actually said, "Oh, this is fog, not smog." But you know, to say, you know, it was too much national pride to say that it was a dirty city. I mean, Kitakyushu City, where I live here in Japan, was like this back in the '60s. You know, we had the colors of the rainbows in the sky and in the rivers. But now it's one of the cleanest cities in Japan.
Because a conscious effort was made to clean it up.
Well, it was the housewives that did it back in the '60s. They got so tired of their sons having asthma that they pushed and pushed and pushed their husbands and you know everybody else to start cleaning up the city, and gradually did because they were so, you know tired of having to deal with sick children. So, very interesting history.
Well, do the Japanese people take umbrage at this kind of filth blowing over?
Oh yeah. I mean that's why we were all told that on Sunday that this was Chinese pollution. It was in our own, and everybody you know believed it hook, line, and sinker until I started talking to some other people, and it wasn't so bad. It was just it was the temperature, Bob, that got to affect that had some kind of interaction with the pollution and you know. The other stuff. There's one more factor that caused this very dangerous ultraviolet rays to come through, and everyone, you know, don't go outside.
What about Japan, Robert? Do they have the profound trade relationship with China that we do?
Not so much because you know there's this history of distrust, you know, and they know that if they put all their factories in China, then you know they're in a real vulnerable position. So. There's much more unease and suspicion there, but you know, still, it's getting.
Well, I've noticed that Japanese goods seem to be becoming scarcer in this country. Those are high dollar goods now, as compared to the cheap garbage you can get from China.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find a bicycle that's made in Japan anymore. I'm not even sure you can find one made in Japan anymore. These textiles. Almost all Chinese now. Kitakyushu has gone from a steel city. I mean, we still have steel mills. I mean, you can still see them pumping out the world's most expensive steel. But the reason they're still in place is because the Japanese industry will buy that steel. They will...
They'll support their own economy
exactly,
as opposed to...
Exactly, because they know that...
And they'll
they
do it at cost.
Right. They know if they don't, then fewer people have the money to buy their steel, I mean, to buy their products, and, or to buy, you know. So it's all part of a national consciousness, I suppose.
Well, trade, you know, trade in the world has just become so bizarre. I'm looking at an email here from our buddy Andy in the Netherlands, and he says that even weirder than my story about the design speakers in Arkansas made in China, he found a company in China that makes guitars both for Gibson and Fender. And he said, is there anything holy left on the planet?
Well, if you went holy, one time, you know, being the American tourist in my own country, I went down to Key West one time with my wife's family as well. And my tradition is to buy a coffee mug in the cities that I visit, either in Japan or outside in the world. So I said, I'll have to buy a nice coffee mug. So I went, there's only three souvenir shops, really, in Key West of note. And they had this nice pink flamingo coffee mug. I said, oh, how nice. It had Key West on it. And I turned it upside down. You know where that coffee mug was made?
Indonesia?
China.
Well, of course, yeah. Because we can't make coffee mugs anymore.
I mean, and with Key West on it, you know, so you can't sell Key West coffee mugs in Omaha or San Francisco, you know. I mean,
yeah.
It's got to be sold in Key West. And I
that's, by golly, a niche market, Robert.
And think about it. I mean, maybe there were, maybe, and there's, I think in the three souvenir shops, they only had two of these and only, you know, maybe a dozen were on sale. Maybe they had 100. Maybe they ordered 100. But can you believe it? I mean, it's going to be, have some factory in China, ship it, make these things, pay these workers, ship it to the port in China, ship it across the Pacific, ship it across the United States, ship it all the way down to Miami, then down to Key West, and sell it. And we can't do that?
Yeah, and we can't beat the price.
And we can't beat the price? I mean...
I don't believe it.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it either. I just...
It's about... this is going to sound a little cliche-ish, Robert. It is about keeping... American workers rock back on their heels.
Yeah.
Because if you've got working people who feel like their job is secure, they might stand up on their hind legs.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
And demand, you know, to be treated like human beings. So,
well,
you know, I mean, that's my best guess.
Unfortunately, it's the reality that you have is unfortunately the reality that of your values. And if you don't have values of, you know, I deserve a good job and I deserve job security, then if you don't stand up and say that, you know, form a union or do something, well, you don't get it.
No, nothing is going to be given that is not demanded.
Exactly.
At least in the current situation.
And unfortunately, the Japanese are learning that lesson a thousand times over. I mean, the only way to live in Japan is to come here as a white man. Because if you're Japanese, you're going to get screwed over big time. I mean, your worst enemy is your own compatriot, unfortunately.
I remember very well, and I may have mentioned this before, but when I started at CNN, I started on the same day with a beautiful, beautiful Japanese-American woman who had gone to Japan, you know, sort of seeking her roots. And, you know, her parents were internment camp victims. I mean, she was, you know, third-generation American.
Right.
Went to Japan to try to break into broadcasting there. And didn't speak Japanese at the time. And you know, went there to immerse herself in the culture, learn the language, and move up from there. She said, you know, the pal that she went over with was, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed American. And
yeah.
the Japanese people were, you know, obsequious and forgiving and,
yep.
Oh, you know, you don't say it that way, you say it this way, to the blonde girl.
Right.
To her, they said, what are you, ignorant?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
She looked Japanese.
Japanese, yeah. You know, so, I mean, it was, there's a funny story. There's a Canadian teacher here that had been here for 40 years. He died recently. And married to a Japanese woman, and so he decided, he gave a dumbass reason for it, but he decided to become a Japanese citizen. Huge guy, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes. And so he got his Japanese citizenship, and then he went to his university to work, And on his first payday, he realized his pay was docked 10%. And so he went to the administration and he said, well, why is my pay lower for 10%? He said, well, you're Japanese now, and so we don't pay our Japanese professors as much as the foreign ones. So, and, you know, and it, he just learned time and again that, you know, having the citizenship is, you know, just actually a real negative. And the workers here, you know, they're working 16-hour shifts. I had a friend's daughter who's half Scottish, half Japanese, and she went through police school, became an immigration officer, and she leaves work to work in Osaka, I think Kansai Airport, gets there at work at 8 o'clock, and she finishes up at 9 p.m.
That's not a life.
And she's in a dorm, you know, because they have worker dorms, you know. And so, yeah, so if you have a work schedule like that, you have no personal life, much less a family life. So we're now in a situation where the Japanese population is declining drastically because people have no time to make families or even have a relationship.
Well, and we've remarked in the past in other conversations, Robert, that is the working reality that the so-called conservatives and the right wing and the Republicans of this country want to take America to.
Yeah,
and they're getting there with real alacrity, because it comes up periodically on this program and others on the horn as well, and I've heard other liberal talkers discussing it. You don't have time to petition your government for redress of grievances. You don't have time to protest. You don't have time to write a letter to your congressman or a letter to the editor if your entire world is taken up in one or two or three jobs. And you've barely got time to eat, and you you barely see your kids growing up, and that's where we're headed. I mean, that it's not even where we're headed anymore, Robert. It's where we are right now.
Yeah,
getting worse by the day.
That's why I left the United States. I mean, that's why I reverse immigrated myself out of there, because I said I just can't do this for my entire life, you know. So. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, I mean, especially with this, you know, the latest little fiasco from the Democrats of just giving up to this little monkey, I would say for a lot of people, hey, start looking at another countries, because the quality of life at the end of the day is a lot better now than in the United States.
Well, see, I was in my conversation last night with Joe Bagent, his description of life in Belize he said, it's not easy there. He said, it's tough. You know, it's not a lot of what we consider to be creature comforts. But along the way, I'm sitting there listening going, this doesn't sound like anything I object to. Because you've got people living in real communities. You've got real efforts to keep the community together. And it is tempting. I hate to just run away from the fight. There's enough redneck in me that you want to stand up and punch back, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's always good to have a plan B that's, you know, kind of spelled out very clearly. I mean, to the point where you know which flight you're going to be taking and you know where to put the money and stuff. I read recently an internet newspaper that Vanuatu, which is a small little Pacific island, is now number one in the on an index of quality of happiness. And it was done by a very think tank, I guess called the Progressive Center, which is the opposite of the Cato Institute.
Yeah.
It was the Progressive Institute, I don't know. So they went through a lot of calculations in terms of land mass and production and stuff like that, and they said, Vanuatu came out on top in terms of just having really happy people.
Little volcano problem down there.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, the community was there, and you didn't have stress. You didn't have a whole lot of suicides. I mean, this is a suicide economy. I mean, if you're working 16 hours a day, from 8 a.m. to 12 midnight, which a lot of workers are doing here, you're going to be jumping. So we have one person jumping every 15 minutes.
Well, I can identify with certainly not the suicidal angle, Robert, but and I'm not sitting here, jumping up on the cross or anything. But Agnes and I, one or the other, and frequently both of us, are back here about 8 a.m. every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we're out of here about 10 p.m.
Yeah, but my hat is off to you for doing this show as long as you do. I mean,
it'll put some calluses on your hide.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I just stand in sheer awe about you doing this for, you know, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. I just, you know, I was doing, you know, before, you know, I was a deacon trainee twice a month at church, you know, for 30 minutes, and that was killing me on top of everything else.
Well, that was taking a moral toll, too, I think.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about that. But you know, the other news is we had our Japanese agriculture minister commit suicide.
Jeepers.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of scandals there.
Yeah, and well, you know, that's my first impression, right? You know, jeepers. Boy, I sound parochial. But by the same token, we have... boy, is this going to sound bad. We in the United States have an unhealthy attitude about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Romans firmly believed in it. The Japanese have held on to it. But here in America, you know, instead of fighting terrorists, you had John Ashcroft out there trying to make sure that Jesus could see people suffer in pain rather than have them have access to marijuana in cases of cancer.
Mm.
You know, that's what he spent the tax dollars on when he in the first Bush first George administration. He brought lawsuits against what was the state of Oregon marijuana law.
That is a biblical precept. You're missing the whole point. It says in Corinthians, suffering builds endurance, endurance builds character, and character builds hope.
Yeah, and that comes all the way down, and it's odd that something like that, you're absolutely right, it is in Corinthians, and it comes all the way down through 2,000 years, and the next thing you know, you got Nietzsche sitting there saying, that which does not kill us makes us stronger, which is a sort of modernized version of the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, right, yeah. So, you know, I mean, everyone...
See, I don't buy that.
Yeah, work 16 hours a day because yeah, blah blah blah. Yeah, it's amazing. But I'm just amazed that the people here just are not standing up on their feet and saying no, you know, to 16 hours of work and all.
Well, they're working 16 hours. When are they supposed to say no, Robert?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is what happens when you create a whole society, and it's a gradual process. It's over a generation where people think it's normal. I mean, I told you that one student of mine that. Got a job for a race car company, starts at 6 a.m. and finishes at 2 a.m. And he was overjoyed.
Are they, are these people well paid? But it reminds me of the kids that I went to law school with who were thrilled to death to get a $70,000 a year job starting out fresh out of law school. But they had to turn in 7,000 billable hours a year, which meant that they had to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day.
Right. I mean, teachers.
What are you
going to
do
money.
With the money?
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I mean, if you put on an hour-to-hour basis, I mean, probably teachers make better money or even janitors, who knows?
Arguably, yeah.
Yeah. And plus less stress, you know, but...
But we measure everything in terms of dollars.
Well, you know, being here in a society that's conservative, and I mean, it's drenched in conservatism, I can now see what a conservative is mentally and, you know, psychologically, I mean, this is an interesting discussion that you think, you know, what kind of person is a conservative? And I've realized a conservative has several psychological features. One, he doesn't have a large imagination. That's one feature.
Mm-hmm.
And two, he doesn't like new ideas. He despises change. Change is frightening to him or her. He gets down to even like colors. I mean, there's conservative colors. I mean, we just had new buildings and it's the same damn, pea green color or it's brown or it's gray. They're not doing orange, yellow, pink, or red. And they know how to spend money. They don't know rat's ass about generating money, but they know how to spend it. So this Kitakyushu is about 5 years away from bankruptcy because they spent I think $1.5 billion on a port that they spent for 10 years building. Another $1 billion on a shopping mall that's going to
be bankrupt. What is Robert, what is the good life like there then? I mean, what is the good life in Japan?
Well, the good life is actually in the countryside, which, you know, as I've said, you know, actually is most of Japan. I mean, you know, you have Yokohama, you have Kitakyushu, Fukuoka, and Tokyo, but once you get outside of those cities, and it takes, may take 15 minutes or 30 minutes, but once you get out into the countryside, it's quite nice.
Well, I mean, can a guy afford, you know, an acre of ground or whatever and work on his bonsai or whatever?
Yeah, now. Because the population's declining. I mean, like I said, I bought my second house. I mean, I'm renting my first one, but it's a university house that's 3 minutes from my office, right?
Yeah.
So there's no commute. That's how a lot of people live, which is very sane. But I bought my second house for about $63,000, and the housing prices are going down. You go over to Honshu Island, over to Shimonoseki, and pick them up for $30,000 now. But the problem is that young people now don't have access to good jobs, so it doesn't even matter. They're not given bonuses. Y'all don't know what a bonus is. A bonus is twice a year, and it's 3 months of your salary on top of your pay.
Wow.
Okay, so I have two of that right now. Most Japanese with a full time job have that. So you can like buy cars, buy a house, and magic happens, and the stores go crazy on June and December because they know everybody's got a bonus, and so they can actually buy stuff.
It's sort of like the Christmas season here.
Yeah. I mean, a real Christmas. I mean, my wife, who's from the Philippines, when she came to America, and I said, I got my bonus, and she was, oh, thank God, we can actually buy something. And my bonus from the Tallahassee Memorial Psych Center was $25. She was crushed. She said, what kind of nonsense is this, you know? And then they pay you transportation, because the attitude is, why should you have to pay out of your own pocket to come to work?
That kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, so they, you know, the part-timers and everybody else has, except for me, because I'm only 3 minutes, will have a transportation allowance.
Well, you know, I hate to admit it, I'm just dirt ignorant when it gets down to really knowing the inside of that particular culture, or many others for that matter. But at least I admit my ignorance. A lot of what I got of modern Japanese culture, I got from watching reruns of Iron Chef and the restaurant culture there. I had the idea that it had to be skewed, but there has to be a nice country life there. You just suspect it because an entire island chain cannot be taken up in one great big concrete jungle. It can't be supported.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing. I mean, the reason Japan at the end of the day is so rich is because of its work ethic. But the one thing that's held Japan back is just the conservative leaders. I mean, the butt-ass, dumb-ass leaders like we have now. And they've done incredible damage to this country. I have to send you a book called Dogs and Demons, or some pages from it. For example, because of their tiny little imagination, they can't understand beauty. They don't understand beauty at all.
Well, that's just bizarre, though, because going back to my college days, Japanese concepts of beauty were hammered into my head in the English department. You know,
yes.
Studying literature, the various poetic forms, the painting, the sculpture.
Right. But you're talking about the artisans. And the artisans, you know, anyone that's an artisan is usually going to have, you know, it's going to be rather liberal and open-minded, I think. But the politicians, though, they're all conservatives, and so they really don't understand art. So they've destroyed Kyoto. I mean, sure, you have nice temples in Kyoto, but you have to drive 10-15 minutes to go to them. But the city itself is now an absolute shambles.
And that's the ancient, the ancient capital.
Right. And part of it is because of the vision thing. You've got to look ahead and really have an imagination about what is really a beautiful, what should we really do? And conservatives hate the vision thing. That's why we voted out Senior George Bush, I think, because he was asked, what's your vision of America? And he sort of mocked it.
Mm.
Because, you know, conservatives don't have a vision.
No. So. Well, the only vision they have is a vision looking past it to some idealized Leave It to Beaver world.
Leave It to Beaver world, and, you know, and even then it's
and rugged individualism.
Right.
That they had no hand in. Exactly. Robert, it's so good to talk to you. I just love these conversations. It's a chance for me to get outside, at least mentally and imaginationally, outside my own small world. And well, I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I enjoy talking to you as always.
All right. Well, you take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Fascinating. Just I've gone in the course of less than 24 hours, I have gone from Belize to Kita Kyushu, at least in my skull. Susan's back with us. Hey, Susan, welcome back.
Just real quick.
Yeah.
It was California that had the medical marijuana law that was challenged. Oregon has the assisted suicide.
The assisted suicide, exactly. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, nice night.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, right. And John Ashcroft used your taxpayer dollars to torture suffering people who wanted to end their lives on their own terms. He wanted to make them suffer for Jesus' sake. That's an evil bastard. And yet, as evil as he was, and as religiously insane as he was, he turns out being one of the good guys saying, no. I will not sign off on this illegal spying program. To the point that they had to get George Bush on the telephone to call his wife and strong-arm her. You know, everybody's talking about, you know, we need to make George answer the question. Let's subpoena Mrs. Ashcroft. I know that seems ungentlemanly and unsporting, but we really do at this point kind of need to know that kind of stuff, don't we? Especially in light of the fact of him running around talking to his buddies. He's screaming at his buddies now. Yeah, they don't understand me. Whew, mother. A couple of last points before we wrap up tonight. And I'm not sure exactly... well, yeah. You know, of course, that... Fat Tony Scalia's daughter pleaded guilty Wednesday to DUI. Republican family values. But why should we be surprised? You know, I don't want her thrown under the jail or anything.
It is the age of shoddy. We have a shoddy government led by a shoddy president with a shoddy. I mean, shoddy, that's like, oh, something almost useless?
Yeah.
Yeah, something shoddy. That's what we live in.
There's a term we use around here. Maybe y'all use it up on the high plains too, Bob. Jakey.
Jakey. There you go. Yeah, it's just that way. These, I don't know what they are, Bob. I have no idea. They're not Christian. They are not decent. They have nothing in them. They're worthless. They're more worthless than a sandbag in a thunderstorm.
Yep. You know, you can, useless as a kickstand on a tank or a screen door on a submarine.
There you go. It's just worthless. This government we have must be released. We must release them to the hell that they have brought to us and send them back to where they came from, and that's instead of Republican, what do you call it, the minority, and leave them there.
Yeah, I like them being a minority, and I like them getting more minor every day.
Yes, it's so sad to listen to good men speak of faith and the love of God and use it in such a way. It is so sad, and it is so counterproductive. It does nothing to save us or give us anything. It just takes and takes and takes. Just
you know,
like that.
that's interesting, the play you make on the words there, Bob. Truly, the Republican Party is politics in a minor chord, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and it's worse than that. It's worse than that. It's like it's a disease. It's like a cancer on the country. country.
Yeah, it's,
not in the presidency.
No, it's a cancer on our body politic, without a doubt. We're up against it. We've run out of time, Bob. Call in again. We'll get right to you, all right?
Well, that's okay. Just listen, folks. If we, the people, do not stand up for our rights, stand against these people. Look them in the eye and tell them, no more. We've had enough of you. We've listened to your CRAP, and we don't want to.
And we're done. Exactly. Bob, thank you so much, brother. Call soon, okay?
I'll do it.
And give our best to Glenda,
oh,
please.
Oh, she's doing fine.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, and just in case you were wondering, MediShare, I won't give the name of the listener who writes, but that scamming outfit's unbelievable. Their prices are the same as real insurance. They never helped my super Christian sister-in-law when she was hospitalized for 5 months with septic infection from leaving a sponge in her after surgery. They disappeared. Even though she's a diehard super Christian, she's suing. I'm sure they send the ghouls to your house to pick it clean after you croak. Sheep are there for the fleecing, aren't they? At least that's the way Falwell believed. And the rest of them do believe. Thanks, everybody. I don't know where this show went. I started it a few minutes ago, and it was a little after 6 Eastern, and now it's almost 9. Wow. We'll be back tomorrow night. You guys rock. Thanks, Agnes, for producing. Thanks, Ben Birch, for streaming and archiving and podcasting. Do the Right Thing by Ben's fundraiser at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who helped us get this network started and work every day to build the American dream and help us save the American dream. Liza, to bed. Now. Because I said, that's why. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. Andrew Speaker has been identified as the TB patient who took 7 international flights against doctor's advice recently. The 31-year-old attorney said he knew he had the disease when he left for Europe to get married. Today, it was also revealed that Speaker's new father-in-law works for the Centers for Disease Control as a TB researcher. But he didn't pick up the disease from him. Speaker is now in quarantine at a Denver hospital renowned for treating patients with lung disease. A U.S. Lieutenant General says 80% of the enemy combatants in Iraq are, quote, reconcilable, end quote. And that he's pressing his officers to craft ceasefires with the various insurgent factions. Forging the reconciliations would hasten the withdrawal of U.S. troops. President Bush expects American soldiers to be in Iraq for many years to come. He compared his vision of the future in Iraq to be similar to that of South Korea. He made the announcement as the last of the troop surge of 21,500 U.S. combat personnel arrived in Baghdad. In Fallujah, a suicide bomber detonated himself in a line of potential police recruits this morning, killing 25 people and wounding 50 others. In Iraq, 3 more U.S. soldiers have been killed. Actor, radio announcer, and former U.S. Senator Fred Thompson said he's testing the political waters for a campaign run as the Republican presidential candidate. At a Moscow news conference, Russian President Vladimir Putin said his country is not responsible for initiating, quote, a new round of arms race, end quote, when asked if his country's test firing of an intercontinental ballistic missile earlier this week was in response to the U.S. planned missile defense system in Europe. The White House indicated that Putin's remarks underscore the need for such a system. The Russian leader also criticized, quote, imperialism, end quote, in global affairs, referring to the U.S. A gang of human organ thieves has been put out of business in Pakistan. 9 people, 4 of them doctors, were reported by one intended victim that got away. He said the scammers lured job seekers to a house where they were tranquilized and had their kidneys removed. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Coming up next, science and business news.
Harry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Harry's Lounge and the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
In Seattle, a man described as one of the world's most successful spammers has been indicted on 35 counts, including mail fraud and identity theft. FBI agents say computer users may see an immediate decrease in spam. In a move positioning the U.S. to begin negotiations, President Bush proposed a meeting with the world's biggest economies to take action on cutting greenhouse gas emissions. The International Whaling Commission kept the 21-year moratorium on commercial whaling in force in a vote in Alaska today. Norway and Iceland vowed to keep on whaling. Japan remained contentious on the issue as well. Tropical Storm Barbara is gaining strength off the coast of Oaxaca and is forecast to reach the resort town of Acapulco by Monday. New Hampshire is catching up with 12 other states in banning smoking in bars and restaurants. Tennessee is on the verge of doing the same thing, but only in restaurants, not bars. Motorola is shedding 4,000 jobs this year as part of its plan to cut costs and raise profitability. And it's good news for investors of Dell Computer, whose net income defied forecasters and rose to 34 cents a share. Dell employees are receiving bad news, however, as the number 2 PC maker announced a 10% job cut, or 8,800 workers, over the next 12 months. Oil is up 52 cents right now. The Dow ended down 5 points at 13,627. S&P 500 ended flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Welcome to America Back on Track here on the Quality News Network. It's Wednesday, hump day, May 30th. I'm your correspondent, Tony Seaton. David Henderson, an economist and an author, is